I realize this is perhaps a somewhat unconventional way of writing a book on astrology, speaking a book on astrology in a semi-spontaneous manner, in which some exactitude of thought is sacrificed for the spontaneous conversational approach. And of course, it will demand of most students of this commentary, first be a student of the book, then a student of the commentary. That's the order. Study the book first, and then see if that which the commentary offers can be of any service. It will take, I think, some years to get through it, just as it's taken me some years to produce it. But it's an experiment under Uranus, as I have pretty well Uranus on my Mercury and at the midpoint between the Sun and Mercury and Uranus on the Sun. So it's an experiment in a different method of transmitting thought, a method which is now available due to certain internet developments, which again Mercury and Uranus involve. The three crosses, cosmic, systemic, and human, cosmic cardinal, systemic, I suppose fixed, human mutable, are profoundly interesting in their interrelation. This decay is going to be developing in the second section of the book. We can only imagine, you know, we are dealing with crumbs from the tables of the gods, tiniest fraction of what the master knows, and yet voluminous to us. But this kind of knowledge will grow for us, and it will grow the more when we manage to apply it rather than just storing it up and keeping it. That which is used is retained. And the old saying, use it or lose it, is really true. If you don't use it, it fades away. So the three crosses, cosmic, systemic, and human, are profoundly interesting in their interrelation, and this we shall discover when we come to study with care their significance, position, and energizing effect in the zodiac, both upon our planet and upon each other. So the crosses will affect each other, these crossing lines of energy in space will have interactive effects upon each other. It's all a group process of great lords of constellations configured with each other in different ways, each one of the 12 related to every other and to combinations of others, each related to another and another and another until it's related to all, each related to two at a time, each related to three at a time, four at a time, and so forth. There are multiple relations of these zodiacal lords, but only a few of them at this time relatively are important for humanity, important to know about. Otherwise we will become overwhelmed with the possible knowledge. I remember somewhere in my writings is the attempt to relate every constellation to every other constellation and to form musical chords with them and to form geometrical figures with them and so forth. And I realized I was just getting off into the realm of knowledge almost for knowledge's sake. So we have to stick to those relationships which are truly significant to the developing of the kind of consciousness we have now. So this we shall discover, this profoundly interesting interrelation, when we come to study with care. He says we all always read a bit too superficially their significance, position, and energizing effect in the zodiac, both upon our planet and upon each other. This we shall do in a later part of this section of the treatise. Virgo belongs to the earthly triplicity, and an understanding of this triplicity will also be found illuminating. Notice how in the last chapter he dealt with the three air signs in terms of mind, supermind, and universal mind, Gemini, Libra, and Aquarius, respectively. So he is going to bring us this relation. This has to do with the world which the senses reveal, the world of form, particularly on the etheric and physical planes, though I suppose if there are condensed forms on the various planes, the earthly triplicity could apply. But in the simplest way, when we think of the meaning of earth, we think of that which is produced upon the etheric physical plane. Water, the astral, fire, the mental, and air, beginning with the cosmic ethers, the buddhic plane, and air also related, I would say, to the etheric plane. Precisely what the elements are, modes of motion, modes of relationship between constituent factors, atomic, subatomic, particles, modes of relationship, I would say, and degrees of denseness, degrees of motion. This is what constitutes an element. Degrees of density, the quality of motion, speed of motion, the tendency to aggregate or non-aggregate. The forces which cause these things are the elements. So the three signs are Taurus, Virgo, and Capricorn, and they are related to each other in a peculiar way in connection with the non-sacred planet, our Earth. Earth is earthy. It's interesting that we're dealing with Earth signs, and naturally they would have a close relation to our rather dense little planet, the Earth. Taurus especially so, I think. He'll discuss this. The relation with which we are concerned is that of the meeting and fusion of the energies of these three signs upon the Earth. All signs meet upon the Earth, of course. They are gathered under the Law of Assembly in Shambhala, and they are directed where needed. So Shambhala is a center in the Earth, shall we say, or on the inner planes of the Earth. And all signs, the energy of all signs, is gathered into that shambolic center. But maybe there's a peculiar effectiveness of the earth signs in relation to these three signs. You know, the moon is quite involved here, isn't it? The moon is part of the planetary scheme we call the Earth scheme. It's exalted in Taurus, it's the esoteric ruler in Virgo, and it's in detriment in Capricorn. The moon is related, and if the moon is related, the Earth is related, because the moon is none other than the Earth in an older form or an older incarnation. So the relation with which we are concerned is that of the meeting and fusion of the energies of these three signs upon the earth, and their effect upon the kingdoms in nature, which our earth manifests. You know, when you look at them, you can see sort of Taurus related to both the vegetable and the mineral kingdom, Virgo especially to the vegetable kingdom, Taurus also to the animal kingdom, Capricorn to the mineral kingdom. Let's see what DK says about this. It might be said that Taurus is the incentive behind evolution. Stimulates the desire, the nature of desire. Stimulates desire which, if indulged, followed, pursued over many years, leads to development. It is the desire for experience, for satisfaction. And those satisfactions, of course, are quite instinctual in the early days. It always has to do with knowledge, with light, the acquisition of knowledge, but eventually, in the beginning, the acquisition simply of experience and satisfaction within that experience, the expression of the instincts and their satisfaction. Whether we're dealing with the experience of eating, the sexual experience, the experience of comfort, there are all kinds of promptings the form has, and Taurus is involved in their fulfillment at first, but eventually experience leads to knowledge and towards greater light, towards Venus, the ruler of Taurus, and the acquisition of things which satisfy desire turns into the acquisition of that which brings greater light, the acquisition of knowledge. But the acquisitive tendency, the tendency to magnetically gather to oneself, is strong in Taurus, whatever the plane that it may be focused upon. So Taurus, incentive, a prompting, an impulse. Both of these signs, Aries and Taurus, are impulsive. Taurus may be slower to react at first, but once galvanized into action, more difficult to stop. So there's a great rush forward towards satisfaction, and it leads to satiation in relation to Scorpio. All of these lower desires will always fail to satisfy that which the spirit incessantly demands. Satisfaction can never hold the divine discontent of spirit. With Virgo, okay, so the word is incentive. And it's the incentive behind evolution pursued through the fulfillment of desire. So evolution pursued through the fulfillment of desire. Desires always rising with each new satisfaction or satiation. Then here's another incentive. It's Virgo incentive behind discipleship. That's the goal. Desire for expression. Oftentimes associated with the seventh ray and with Leo. But here, the desire for expression, spiritual desire, so a type of aspiration. Though we cannot discount the importance of aspiration in relation to Taurus, the highest form of aspirational idealism is found in Taurus. Interesting and maybe unsuspected. So the light of knowledge, accumulation of knowledge in an outer sense for Taurus, and the search for the hidden light of God, which in Virgo, which gives wisdom. The cultivation of wisdom is occurring in Virgo. It's a sign of deep internal consideration, and as the consciousness grows in its own right, the Christ consciousness, it brings increasing wisdom. So it's prompting. The Taurus goes out and finds that which it desires. It works with the color green, I think, at times, in the outer sense. It grazes, it fills itself, fulfills itself. It keeps moving forward through the elevation of its desires and ever higher acquisitions. So we can say this. Evolving through ever higher acquisitions or satisfactions. But now the hidden light of God, we might call this the Christ light in a way, is found in Virgo. And the inner quality, literally quality, seeks expression. And when the Virgo individual is evolving and matter is no longer reigning, then desire gives way to aspiration, and that which is desired is of the inner world, deeply interior, not common, not outer, not superficial. Then we move to another incentive. I like these words, incentive, that which prompts one towards a certain type of action. Certainly a different way, isn't it, of looking at these signs. Now, you know, sometimes when DK describes what they do, he seems to be fixing them as operative at a certain level of evolution. But the more we examine how they operate throughout the gamut of human possibilities, we see that they can be applied at any level of evolution. But when compared with each other, perhaps there's a probability that they will work at a certain level of evolution, although the number of very high Taurians is remarkable. So it's not to be confined strictly to the evolutionary stage and the acquisition of outer knowledge. Capricorn gives us the incentive behind initiation, and initiation prompts towards service, of course, desire for liberation, service desire. So it's not just spiritual desire to find that inner self, but let us say that having found the inner self, that inner self must be applied. It is liberated, thus strengthened, and applied in helping the members of the whole. This is service. Now, I suppose the word desire is operative with all of these. Desire for experience, okay? Spiritual desire in Virgo. And service desire. This factor of desire keeps repeating itself. In relation to the earth signs, the factor of desire repeats itself in relation to the earth signs. Venus is important here, being the ruler of Taurus, the hierarchical ruler of Capricorn, and falling sacrificially in Virgo, where matter initially reigns. Service desire. He gives us such different perspectives upon the signs. Just when we think we've nailed down the meaning of a particular sign and it means this and only this, he shows us that it means something additional that we may not have thought of at all. So Capricorn prompts towards initiation and reveals the light of life at the third initiation. And Virgo prompts towards the discovery of the hidden light of God, or I suppose the discovery of God immanent as the Christ principle. Discovery of God immanent as the Christ principle. And Taurus prompts towards the ongoing fulfillment of desire and thus its elevation and thus in acquisitions of increasing value. So Taurus leads to acquisitions of increasing value and eventually spiritual value. The light of knowledge, Taurus, the light, the hidden light of God, Virgo, the light of life. And we have the three aspects of divinity accordingly. Okay. Three aspects of divinity accordingly. With interestingly, Taurus here, associated with the third aspect of divinity, Virgo with the second aspect of divinity, and Capricorn, in this case, with the first aspect of divinity. All these express desire as it merges into aspiration in the process of bringing light and life to man. So they begin with desire and move towards aspiration. But remember again, the cycle keeps recurring because a very high form of desire or of aspirational idealism is found with Taurus. So it doesn't just stay there with desire for the acquisition of material things. It doesn't just stay looking simply for experience and for normal satisfactions. Later satisfactions are also possible, as in the case of the Buddha or Krishnamurti or, well, Socrates or of Bertrand Russell. Well, there are many great Taurians, and Father Damien had Taurus rising. He was a Capricorn with Taurus rising. Quite a Vulcanian setup for the fourth initiation, I think. Sometimes the power of the path just sweeps you along so strongly that, you know, the best you can do is steer. You're no longer going on your own personal motive power. Something within is driving, and the steering of the chariot becomes important, lest it capsize, or of the boat, lest it capsize in the water. So all these express desire. Desire is a factor here. And when we're dealing with Earth, we are on a planet where desire is being transformed into will. On a planet, planet, where desire is being transformed into will. In Virgo, the purpose for which form life exists begins to be realized. Not only matter, but form, because the second aspect is there, the second aspect, the form builder. In Virgo, the purpose for which form life exists begins to be realized, and the desire for personality satisfaction, as experienced in Taurus, begins to change. Personality satisfaction, as it exists in earlier Taurus, begins to change, and the desire of man for interior recognition of the indwelling Christ begins to assume increasing control until the inner spiritual reality is eventually released from the thraldom of matter and becomes manifest in its own true nature in the world. And I suppose that release happens through initiation in Capricorn or Aquarius. So no longer personality satisfaction so related to Taurus. Taurus and Leo together in early stages, a real demand for personality satisfaction. But it begins to change and become more interior. The interiority of Virgo is well recognized, and the kind of introversion of many Virgos. You always have to see what else may be in the chart. It can cause a great contrast among people in the same signs, different aspects, different planetary placements, of course. But interior recognition of the indwelling Christ, as he said, the desire for the inner, the hidden light of God, spiritual desire for the hidden light of God. Yes. Until the inner spiritual reality, which is our spirit soul, is released from the slavery, the thraldom of matter, which means it no longer is confined to observe, be cognizant only of matter. Its state of consciousness can change. And it can rise and become manifest in its own true nature in the world. So the soul becomes a thing unto itself, a true center, no longer held down by earthly perceptions. Materialism is a matter of perception. Those who are enthralled to matter perceive only it, and are materialists as a result, because they have nothing to contrast it with. Putting the same thought in other terms, the light of knowledge, of which Taurus is the custodian, gives place to the light of wisdom, of which Virgo is the guardian, and yields finally to the light of initiation in Capricorn. Well, that's a marvelous summation, as DK tends to do, putting things together for us in a way that is memorable. So, the light of knowledge of which Taurus is the custodian. Just imagine Taurus in the second ray. What accumulitis one would have then. What acquisitiveness. The light of knowledge of which Taurus is the custodian gives place to the light of wisdom, the light of the hidden inner Christ, of which Virgo is the guardian. Custodian means one keeps. But if one is a guardian, there is a higher degree of vigilance. So Virgo is very watchful over that which it is protecting and guarding, and yields finally the light of initiation in Capricorn. So, three lights: knowledge, wisdom, initiation. And all of this related to three earth signs, and how very limited is the usual conception of earth signs as given by ordinary astrology. Here we really see the spiritual nature of these signs, which are usually given such a mundane description. I don't know about you, but it took me, I think, a long time to unlearn much of what I had learned in conventional astrology, or to see that it was just a limited subset of what Master DK was teaching. All this, however, takes place and must take place upon what is esoterically called the radiant surface of the earth, the plane of form. So the acquisition of knowledge and the pursuit of the hidden light of wisdom and the release into greater power and into a still greater light, a light sublime, all must take place within the plane of form. So these acquisitions and cultivations and liberations must take place from within the form. And form is wisely used to bring these things about. The assumption or glorification of the Virgin has not yet taken place, and the rising up of substance is not yet realized. This is certainly true of our present age. We are much enthralled to matter and to the perception of matter form, and the fullest potential of matter form is not yet realized. The necessary stimulation, vitalization, radiation are not yet occurring. So it's interesting to note, he says, that Scorpio establishes the inevitability of this final assumption of matter in Capricorn. Sometimes we think of the assumption of the virgin matter associated with the death of Mary, which many scholars seem to put sometime in Leo, the assumption being celebrated either on the 15th of August in the Catholic Church or actually in Virgo on the 28th of August by the Eastern Church. At least Virgo, the way that date, the 28th, lines up with our present calendar, it's in Virgo. But Scorpio lifts the Hydra into the heavens. So, and this is prevision for us in the story of Hercules and Scorpio when he raises the Hydra high above his head into the air and perceives from intuitive consciousness the unreality of that which with which he had been involved. So he perceives from intuitive consciousness illusion, glamour, and Maya. And thereby, through that perception, extricates himself. So we're interested in changing the quality of matter, changing our perceptual relationship to it, changing our practical energetic relationship to it. Matter will be lifted up into heaven, meaning it will be able to support the heavenly energies, and its inherent spiritual qualities will, under Vulcan, I think, radiate forth. It will be a very different type of matter, more radioactive, more radiant, less opaque, less veiling of the higher energies. It will change its character, and the changing of matter's character is dependent upon the element Earth. Changing of the character of matter is related to the three earth signs. So a rising up, an elevation, an etherealization is going on with respect to this heaviest of our perceptions, the material perceptions. And a change, a transmutation is occurring, which will allow the successful permeation of matter form by spirit soul. Virgo symbolizes depths, the valley, you know, darkness. It's not a solar sign, more a lunar sign. Quiet and warmth, sufficient warmth to promote the continued growth of the germ of the Christ consciousness. If we think about whether certain plants will grow better in the warmth or in the harsh cold, it's pretty obvious. And this is the purpose of the greenhouse, the hothouse. Virgo so related to the plant kingdom and to growth within the plant kingdom, the vegetable kingdom. So Virgo has these qualities, deep, dark, quiet, warm, nurturing. All of these are nurturing growth. It is the valley of deep experience. Not necessarily externalized, not necessarily revealed. Much is held in, let us say. It is the valley of deep experience wherein secrets are discovered and eventually brought to light. So it works towards revelation, just as the mother slowly works towards the revelation of the child. Slowly working towards revelation. It is the place of slow and gentle, yet powerful crises and periodic developments. We're dealing here with a secondary sign in a way, the wise use of slow action. It is not a sign of speed, just the way Cancer, probably even slower, is not a sign of speed. Scorpio is rather faster, and Capricorn is fastest yet. It is a place of slow, gentle, yet powerful crises, almost slow motion, one can say, and periodic developments which take place in the dark and which yet lead to light. Within the womb we have the idea of darkness, and through birth coming into the light. So birth is a coming into, interesting that in the question of the assumption of the Virgin, the constellation is considered lost in the sun during the late Leo period, late Leo, early Virgo period. The sun blots out the constellation. Excessive light is dark. But then as the wheel turns and the constellation moves on away from the area of the sun, or rather the sun appears to move on through the turning, through the revolution of Earth in its orbit, then a Virgo reemerges from the glory of the sun. And because it is seen, it is as if it is coming to birth. So these are profound things being said about the general experience of the Virgo life. Deep, dark, quiet, warm, slow, gentle, powerful. These are words which are not about drama, per se. Very interior processes which are producing over a long period of time great changes. So to say, great changes over a long period of time. They take place in the dark, yet lead to light. Well, it's a bit like Scorpio. The fight is in the dark of Maya, glamour, illusion, and with the conquest of the Hydra, the warrior is released into the intuitive light of day, from darkness to light. So, with both Virgo and Scorpio, two M signs relating to matter, we have a movement from darkness to light. It is the blinded stage which is found in the Masonic rituals and which ever precedes the gift of light. So it is dark and blinded, and preceding coming of the Christ light. Dark and blinded. Virgo stands for the womb of time. A womb is an area in which a slow development is occurring out of the sight of the many. Now, of course, we have the kinds of electronic machines which will reveal to us what's going on in the hidden area. We can imagine how very hidden the womb was for millions of years before the X-ray and other equipment allowed us to see within. So Virgo stands for the womb of time. For a long time, certain processes leading to revelation are in slow development, and one does not see their issue. The womb of time, where in God's plan, the mystery and the secret of the ages, is slowly matured, and with pain and discomfort, and then through struggle and conflict, brought into manifestation at the end of the appointed time. So, this is the the tribulations of the birthing hour. And he makes this analogy to the emergence of the plan. If the time is too early, revelation is impossible. In the fullness of time, there is emergence from the hidden stage of the womb into the light of day. Into the light of day. And that which has been concealed is then revealed. I mean, who knows the plan right now? A few do. Others are beginning to sense something emerging from darkness into light, but still much is darkened. The birthing hour of the revelation of the plan has not really come. So until the fullness of time is upon us, that which will be revealed is hidden, though we know it is growing. We have the faith. And perhaps, just as there is ultrasound today and various methods of revealing that which is going on in the womb, by some occult methods in the possession of the masters and maybe of advanced disciples, that which is coming to birth in the womb of time can also be revealed ahead of time. Not all will see it. One has to have the right inner technology to see the plan taking shape behind the scenes and hidden from the gaze of the profane. So today it would seem, curiously and convincingly, that we are entering into the eighth month of the gestation period. We have passed perhaps the point when many miscarriages occur and we're well beyond spontaneous abortion, and certainly the idea of abortive intervention is not part of this process. We are entering into the eighth month of the gestation period. This is almost literally the case where humanity is concerned, for counting from Virgo to Aquarius, the sign we are now entering, we find that there are just eight signs. He's going clockwise. Virgo, Leo, Cancer, Gemini, Taurus, Aries, Pisces, Aquarius. Eight signs. It appears that birth will occur in Capricorn just as it did for the Christ child. So DK's method of counting, both forward and backward, and different relationships can be revealed through this method of counting. So we are in the eighth month, and it's almost as if Capricorn has much to do with the initiation of humanity. We expect a significant initiation of humanity in the Aquarian Age, but since Capricorn is the final sign, the sign of the ninth month and of the birth, surely by then, significant initiations of humanity, maybe initiation beyond the first, can be experienced. So coming into this age of Aquarius, and I suppose starting back from a certain age of Virgo, and who knows, maybe these are 25,000-year periods, in which case we'd be dealing with something, 175,000 years ago, as we're just entering Aquarius, would be 200,000 years by the time we enter Capricorn, if we consider the Platonic years, or if we have 2,500 year periods, we've got about 1,750 more than that, 25, so that's 10,000, we've got something more like 20,000 years ago or 17,500 years ago. So certain processes begin and are now coming into emergence. We're certainly nearing the time of initiation and of birth. Will there be births in Aquarius in a way we do expect it? But by the time we reach Capricorn, surely. In one way, that's another 2,500 years off, 2,300 years. And this is surely the guarantee that the birth of the new age, of the new consciousness, and the new civilization and culture is inevitable and sure. The right time has been reached. So, we have reached the birthing time. And there is an interesting relationship here on page 333, where it says Aquarius releases Virgo from her load. So, perhaps by the end of the age of Aquarius, this release will occur. Virgo has been carrying this internal development, and now we're into this age of release, liberation, release from the load. Aquarius will do that. It's only 8 months, but still, from a certain perspective, we expect the release to occur. And I suppose we expect it to continue in the age of Capricorn, by which time, who knows, there may be quite a number of third-degree initiates as well as initiates of the first degree. So this way of counting tells us something about the historical period in which we find ourselves. We're entering the eighth month. We've past this critical seventh-month period where so many miscarriages occur. It's pretty well guaranteed from this time that the birth will occur. And a release is going to occur, and it will bring great cultural and civilizational change to humanity and the emerging of the Christ principle in a society that has been dominated recently by gross material values. Master Moria warned of the time when the love of gold would be predominant in the atmosphere. All things would be measured by it. It's as if trying to measure spiritual values by financial standards can't be done. You're reducing the quality of the second aspect by trying to put it in terms of a third. That has to be reversed. So we're speaking here of Aquarius and Virgo and Aquarius and the birth of the new age. And also we'll be speaking of Virgo Capricorn. That will complete the nine. Where right now we are witnessing the Plutonic eruption of so many obstacles to the coming of the new age and the new consciousness. We could be bewildered by all the negativity coming from the lower aura of humanity that is rising before our eyes. We could think that nothing better lies behind it, and that we will be overwhelmed by this negativity. That's where we need the knowledge of the ageless wisdom, of the process, and the faith that indeed it is in process, and there is an inevitability to it. Yes, we could delay our emergence, some have said by a few hundred years, or a few thousand. But I think that the emergence of the Masters at this time into the outer world is designed to help humanity avoid this terrible fate of delay, or the even worse fate of having to start again and pass through more millions of years of development until a true, truly spiritual humanity can be developed. I would like to pause here, he says, and make one point somewhat clear in connection with the passage of human life around the zodiac. This progress or passage falls into three major divisions. Well, we've reached the four-hour point, but like I said, we're, due to my error, probably another 10 minutes or so remains, so I'll go until 4 hours and 10 minutes and ask Brett to get rid of those 10 minutes of just empty airtime. So this progress or passage falls into three major divisions, the passage of human life around the zodiac. He helps us incorporate these different perspectives by introducing them in the right place, and hopefully our vision is wide enough to introduce them, the new perspectives, in a way that will not utterly confuse us. He has been very careful in his attempt not to confuse us, and yet I find that I've spent years with this book, and it takes years to disentangle misconceptions. So there is the passage of humanity around and around the zodiac from Aries to Pisces by a Taurus. This is the counterclockwise way until in Virgo Leo. I see, from Aries to Pisces via Taurus. I see what he means. So we seem to be moving backwards. Aries will move to Pisces and will return to its originate position via Taurus. So until in Virgo Leo, for these two signs are regarded esoterically as inseparable, as the Sphinx is one unit, the mass movement releases the individual to a life of self-conscious progress and a change of progression around the wheel of life. This lies far in the past, I suppose, for some. Unless he's talking about the passage of animal man, which comes, which in Virgo Leo gives us individuality. So we could be talking, this could be about animal man progressing up to the state of individualization, which occurs very much in relation to Leo. And I suppose Virgo brings in his substance aspect. So the individual is released into a life of self-conscious progress and changes his mode of progression around the wheel of life. Now here's the thing. This seems to be a clockwise motion, changing to a counterclockwise motion. But as we look, the Aries to Pisces, well, via Taurus, I suppose there is the possibility. It's difficult to know whether we're talking about a clockwise progression here or counterclockwise, because Aries to Pisces via Taurus, Aries Taurus around to Pisces. Man is not yet individualized, so he would not be progressing in a clockwise manner, but he would go with the great natural mass movement that DK talked about, which is in the same order of progression that advanced man progresses. But then why does he call it Virgo Leo? Because if we're going forward in the counterclockwise manner with all the mass movements, it would be Leo Virgo. unless he tries to show that Virgo Leo really is the Sphinx, because it's the head of the woman and the body of the lion. If this lies in the far past, I think he is talking about individualization, and there will be a changed mode of progression around the wheel of life. So when he says Aries to Pisces via Taurus, he seems to be talking about the counterclockwise mode of progression, which is occurring before individualization occurs. Different ways of interpreting this, because one could think one went from Aries to Pisces directly via Taurus, which leads into Aries, but the way this looks, it looks like pre-individualization, which would demand a counterclockwise motion of the wheel. Anyway, far in the past suggests millions of years. Now the passage, see, what are we looking at again? We're looking at the passage of human life around the zodiac. So he's begun, I think, with animal man. Let's see. The passage or progress of the individual man which runs counter to the mass advance. Okay, indeed he is. So man is individualized. He is finding himself as a separate being. He does not feel unity with the group. He feels isolated within his newly found distinction. So it's going to go clockwise. The individual at this stage proceeds clockwise. Okay. If he had only said counterclockwise in the earlier one, it would have been easier to figure out. But the individual at this stage proceeds clockwise with from Aries to Taurus via Pisces. So the Aries to Pisces and the Aries to Taurus represents a beginning point and an end point. And the via shows the direction. All right, that's clear now. To me, at least. Maybe it was clear to you all along. So, we're almost there where I can declare that we're beginning number five. The individual at this stage proceeds clockwise from Aries to Taurus via Pisces. His life is then, and for long ages, and there it is. This is the whole key, because group progression is not antisocial. The group and care for the group and participation in the group is what sociality is all about, sociableness. His life is then predominantly antisocial, so he is overcome by the Ahamkara separative principle. Antisocial in the spiritual sense. He doesn't realize his identity with the group. It's anti-Aquarian in a way. It's very early Leonian. And he is selfish and self-centered. His life is then and for long ages, millions of years, predominantly, though there may be little interludes here or there, antisocial in the spiritual sense. He is selfish and self-centered. His efforts are for himself and for his own satisfaction and personality enterprises, and this becomes steadily stronger and stronger. This is the present situation for the masses who are moving into greater individualism. Yes. Moving into greater individualism. So they have not even reached the stage of real personality integration and the highest state of seeming separateness from the group. I sometimes look at these people in the political arena who are espousing the philosophy of rugged individualism. They are just not advanced to the point of realizing their inherent relation to the group. I think capitalism and rugged individualism go together, and socialism and group consciousness go together, though there are abuses, obviously, of socialism as well, as of individualism, and we never want to stifle the initiative of the individual. It's a both-and situation. So that is another mode of progressing around the zodiac, and I suppose finally we're going to come to the passage or progress of the reoriented man from Aries to Pisces, again via Taurus. So we've gone from mass movement to individual movement to the movement of the man who is increasingly group conscious. Movement of the man who is increasingly group conscious. In this final stage, he returns to the great, to the same directive method, rhythm and measure of the earlier mass movement, but this time with changed and changing attitudes of selfless service, because he wasn't really conscious before. Let's say this way, not really conscious when, or not really, let's call it self-conscious, when moving with the mass. He became self-conscious, but moved as the individual. Now he moves as an individual who is part of a group, and his orientation is towards preserving the integrity of that group through selfless service. This time, he returns to the same directed method, rhythm, and measure of the earlier mass movement, but this time with changed and changing attitudes of selfless service, a personality dedicated to the service of humanity with a voluntary, his will is strengthened now, a voluntary reorientation of his energies. So that's the redirection of the energy currents, the reversal of the wheel, so that they are directed towards the production of synthesis in his environment and understanding in his consciousness. And this will be the situation in the future for the masses. But first, they have to go through the process of individualism, which carries, as DK says, its own dangers, the danger of many who are in a state of personality integration but are still inherently selfish and competitive. And now we have a transitional phase in which we have selfish and competitive groups. It's a sort of a Leonian tincture of the Aquarian process. We're not yet in the true stage of Aquarius. It's just different memes, as has been suggested, people at different levels of understanding and perception and fighting for what they think is correct. Whoops, have gone beyond. Sure they have. Well, anyway, this is a bit of a mess in terms of time. But let's just call this the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure, number 84, D, page 262, and beginning, Esoteric Astrology Adventure, 84, E, page 262. Brett tells me that it doesn't make any difference if things are exactly an hour long. And I suppose there's much to divide up because I've done singles, doubles, triples, quadruples, quintuples, sextuples. I think the longest program I have is 6 hours long. You'd have to have, you know, pretty fast computer to download it, but it could be quite convenient in a way once it was downloaded, less changing around. Probably all this will be released in hour-long segments. I don't know how many CDs would be required, or DVDs. Maybe DVDs are not the right thing at all. Maybe one will have to release on some kind of hard drive the composite of all of this work, which I hope will be done within a year or two, if I am able to apply myself steadily.